This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Stores beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy 6 Celsius, Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1-liter flavors and get the 7th free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got the drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy 6 and get the 7th free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Time now for Mego and Shime on WEEI.
I would say one of the things that has really stood out to me is the amount of control that Mike has over the entire operation and some of the interactions that, well, we had with him, that other people have had with him, that more importantly, the people in the building have had with him. Mike is a strong personality, as you know, Ted, and he's constantly like sort of pushing and prodding, like where's the weak spot, and trying to sort of weed out whether it's, you know, people on the staff, front office people, support people, and certainly he's going to get there with the roster. Like, and I think that's one of the things that I sort of came away with is his overall control level and also the feeling, a strong feeling, a belief, if you will, that the roster is going to look a lot different than some of the guys that were quote unquote core pieces, probably not going to be core pieces, maybe as soon as this trading season, this offseason.
Mango and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. That was Mike Giardi on the WEEI afternoon show with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson. You can catch them every Monday through Friday, 2 to 6, here on WEEI. And so Mike was talking about Vrabel's kind of control right now in the New England Patriots and how he's really kind of sussing out exactly who he wants in his staff and figuring that out. I mean, he's brought in a bunch of different assistants. I think one of the things I do have to give him credit for, and I know I ripped the McDaniel signing, but the way he's filled out the rest of the staff, I really, really like. Like, they have brought in younger assistants under McDaniels, guys that you can kind of mold and help grow in the right direction. That was the kid from Ohio State whose name is escaping me. He's going to be like a quarterback's quality control coach under McDaniels.
Is that Ashton? What's his name?
No, that's Ashton Grant is the quarterback's coach. The kid from Ohio State, I want to say, is either like a quality control coach or just an offensive assistant. But he's only like, he's younger than both of us. I think he's only like 28 or 29. And so I think
he's the next Theo Epstein.
Yeah, and then on top of that, he has like 5 former head coaches on his staff. And so I think that's kind of what you wanted to have seen when Mayo was getting his staff originally, is this uber experienced staff with younger guys underneath them to build them up. Because when those uber experienced guys tend to move on to other jobs and better opportunities, you have younger guys who can step into those roles and hopefully continue to be successful. That's how you build a great franchise and coaching system, is by having layers on layers of coaches. I mean, you look at the early years of the Patriots, right, where you had Bill Belichick and Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel, and then as those guys move on to better opportunities, guys like Josh McDaniels step up, and then he leaves, and a guy like Bill O'Brien is there who has grinded his way up from making copies and working with Dante to now all of a sudden being the offensive coordinator for the best quarterback in football. And so that's the kind of system you need to build. And so I think it's important that Vrabel has started to do this already. Like, it's really a good sign. And as much as I may dislike Josh McDaniels being the offensive coordinator, I'm very happy with the way the staff is coming together.
I am too. I think it's such early days. They haven't really done anything besides hire people right now. So it's hard to look at it and go, whoa, what a great hire. We haven't seen them do anything yet. I'm optimistic is the best way to put it. I look at it and I go, yeah, this just seems to be a much more professional operation than it was at this point last year.
Very much so.
Things are coming together pretty quickly and pretty smoothly, and it seems like pretty organically. I don't know exactly whose idea it was with Josh McDaniels, but when you were hearing about Vrabel before Gerard Mayo was even let go, McDaniels' name was attached to him and
yes,
was out
it was.
There. There was the hypothesis, if you want to be generous, that, oh, Vrabel might come in. And McDaniels would be his OC. And that's exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. So was that something that he kind of knew was going to happen when he was taking the job? Was this that big of a bag job? I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was.
Yeah, so
and I like at least it to me, I'm going, maybe it's not the most creative. And yeah, it's going back to the Foxborough well. And yeah, it's the Kraft's comfort zone. But it does at least on its face look like an improvement from where you sat at this time last year.
Oh, it's absolutely an improvement. Like this coaching staff blows that last one out of the water. Especially just, I mean, from experience alone. I mean, Doug Marrone, a former NFL head coach, was with BC for the last year or so with Bill O'Brien, is now your offensive line coach. Like, that is a massive upgrade from what you had in, was it Scott Peters was the last offensive line coach here?
Now you just had to improve the offensive line.
Yeah, exactly. Now you just have to actually get talent to improve the line. Nobody's Dante Scarnecchia. They can't all work with rubber bands and paper clips, but they're going to have to put something together. And so I think it's been good so far. Again, I still don't care for the McDaniels hiring, but I think the way Mike Vrabel has filled out the rest of the staff is... like, great. I'm really kind of happy and pleased with it. The one interesting note, though, another Giardi nugget for us.
Wait, before we get to that, can we talk about one final part of that clip that I thought was the most interesting?
Please. Yeah.
Was because I know that Giardi's had a bunch of information over the last couple of days. And
crushing
so he's going to be dominating this hour.
Yes,
good
he is.
Job,
thank
Mike,
you, Mike Giardi.
But at the end of that, when he says there's going to be some core players or quote core players from last year that are not going to have that spot, especially when we go into, did he say this trading season? He said this trading season, this off season. Who are they trading? Who's going to be on the trade block that's a quote core player, and who's a quote core player that Mayo looked at the roster and said this is what we're building the team off of and would be somebody that you're totally moving on from this offseason because you're going, that's just not going to, you thought that guy was elite. You thought that guy was a cornerstone of this team. That's why the team sucked last year.
That's interesting because like I look at it and I see it as, okay, your cornerstones to me are Drake May, Christian Gonzalez, hopefully Christian Barmore if health is allows it. And then I guess maybe Keon White. But, like, even he is kind of a question mark, I think, at this point. So, I mean, that to me was your original building blocks. Did you...
Who are the core players that they're going to move on from? Who are the core players that are not going to be the core players next year? Because I think everybody would agree 100% for sure. It's Drake May and Gonzo. Those are your two elite players. Maybe Keon White's in there. Maybe DeMario Douglas has earned a way in there. Maybe Hunter Henry continues to have his spot as a tight end, as a, quote, core player.
Yep.
Who else did you throw in there that you felt like was a core player?
Christian Barmore.
Yeah, I mean...
Maybe Keon White.
Unfortunately, he had the injury stuff last year, so it's kind of hard to say.
And because it's blood clots, it's not like an actual injury. It's very difficult to say what will happen with his health. I think my thing is, the way I interpret core players for me is that I would look at all of the guys who got contracts last offseason. Kyle Duggar... Christian Barmore, I guess, is technically on that list. Ramondre Stevenson.
Ding, ding, ding.
Those are guys I would look at immediately and be like, oh, those guys are movable. Those guys are definitely on the chopping block.
So I think about how we entered last season with Mayo, and all we heard was this is going to be a running team. This is going to be a running team. We're built around the run. Even though they were terrible in the trenches going into the season. Terrible.
Horrible.
In the trenches. They're like, we're going to be a running team because they weren't confident enough to put Drake May in at quarterback and be any other kind of team. And they were saying that with their running back in Ramondre Stevenson, somebody that they had just given a big contract extension to, having mostly been somebody who shared the load with Damian Harris or Ezekiel Elliott for the years before and only had 1,000-yard season, and it was in Matt Patricia's offense.
Correct.
And so I wonder if that is who they're talking about, if it's Ramondre Stevenson, because it would make sense to me, because I think just his build, his character, his makeup, everything, you could put him out on the trade block and say, we've seen what big running backs like Derrick Henry can do.
Yeah.
He could be Derrick Henry light. He could be your diet Derrick Henry. Or you see what Saquon Barkley has done with the Eagles. We're not saying Ramondre Saquon. Nobody's Saquon. But now you see the value of a running back. He just doesn't work with our new system, with what Josh McDaniels wants to do. And you throw him out there, and then you go draft a running back. Like, yeah. To me, that seems like one of the most obvious moves. I'm curious, when I hear core players, who else do you see on this team that's actually a core player that would be dangled out there? Or you just say, we've seen enough of this person, even though we gave them a contract and we saw them as a core player, we got
to
move on.
Well, I think Kyle Duggar's name to me immediately stands out. You even heard his name come up at the trade deadline last year. Like, he got a brand new contract. Clearly they thought he was a core player, but maybe Vrabel feels differently. Maybe that's not how he wants his safeties to play. Maybe he would rather have bigger linebackers or more flexible linebackers, I should say, and smaller safeties, more of that Devin McCourty free safety type in the backfield than a guy who's going to come up in the box and make hits in a guy like Kyle Duggar. So I wouldn't be shocked if he's on that list. The other guy, again, like, I think Keon White could absolutely be on that list. Like, the attitude issues, I don't know if that's actually
that
an issue
or
if that was
out,
a Mayo thing. Yeah.
Do you want to see Keon White gone?
No, I think he's really talented. But if Vrabel is dead set on creating a culture and establishing a locker room that has his personality and the new Patriots personality behind it, I don't know if Keon White fits in.
Here's my issue with that, Chime. Like, and you can say that I'm babying the athlete or whatever, but doesn't it feel like Keon White was right?
Oh, yeah, he was absolutely right.
In real time, I felt like, wow, I can't believe Keon White saying that. Could that be more of Keon White is a really talented and intelligent guy who knew that he was being used in the wrong way?
There's absolutely.
And so he's standing here saying, does anybody see the crap that I'm seeing on Sundays? Because what are we doing here? And then Mayo's coming out and saying, Keon and I had to talk behind the scenes, and his words were misinterpreted by Karen Garigian, one of the longest tenured reporters who never just throws stuff out there on the Patriots beat.
She quoted it perfectly.
And then Keon White comes out an hour later talking to all the other reporters in the locker room saying, I stand by what I said. It wasn't misinterpreted. That's exactly what I said. Like, to me, that was more of a Patriots problem, of the coaching staff problem, than a Keon White problem.
You're probably right.
And there's a difference between somebody being like Ramondre, who is maybe miscast and you can't build an entire offense around him, then Keon White, who's stepping out saying it's really dysfunctional here and I'm not being used in the right way. And then boom, the coach is fired 3 weeks later. And we're going to say we should also move on from Keon. I just don't feel that way.
Yeah, you're probably right. But I just felt like it's still a question mark. I think that has to be taken into consideration. I think the other guy, too, that could be on the list, Mike Onwenu. That was a big contract in the offseason. They claimed they got the best lineman in free agency. They didn't. So he could be on the block. I wonder if Cole Strange was considered a quote-unquote building block because he was a draft pick, a first-round draft pick.
We're talking about something different between building blocks and core players. Like, I think where you started is exactly where it is. The core players are these guys who they extended last year because they were like, these are people we want to have as the cornerstones of our team.
For sure.
And so, yeah, I think Onwenu is a good idea of where they might be talking. Ramondre is a good idea. Duggar, Andrew Callahan had the report a couple weeks ago that he had a major ankle injury that was maybe weirdly managed by the training staff.
He was horrendous in coverage this year,
which would at least
like embarrassingly bad.
Yeah, and so look, I don't know what you'd get back for Duggar at this point, but
I don't either.
I think it also poses to me, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, Shime.
Yep.
Really interesting position for Elliott because Elliott's carrying over, and now you got Vrabel's guy Cowden in there. And maybe Vrabel and Cowden are sitting there saying, like, yeah, you extended all these guys, and we don't see a future for them here.
Unless,
and we got to see what we can get for them now.
That may be true, unless Elliott wasn't necessarily totally in on these guys either.
Well, isn't that what you think the Patriots would want you to believe at this point? If
they're
going to make that move, that, like, once again, Elliott's hands were tied. He wasn't allowed to do what he actually wanted last year in his vision.
But then who was the one signing the free agents? And to me, that makes the Crafts look worse. Like, it makes them look like, oh, they just wanted to re-sign the guys they had in the building, which is exactly what they did, by the way, and instead of actually going out. And so Elliott couldn't do anything. And so if that's the case, I think this is good news for Elliott Wolf. Like, if they move on from Mike Onwenu, and they move on from Kyle Duggar, and they move on from Ramondre Stevenson, and they get all new guys in, and these guys are, like, actual contributors and pretty good on the football team, it's to be like, oh, so maybe this wasn't Elliott Wolf's fault. Maybe, like, I don't know, the crafts were like, hey, Elliott, sign all these guys, and Elliott kind of just had to do what they were told. But now that Mike Vrabel's in charge, he actually gets to collaborate and work with the head coach and actually help sign legitimate free agents and players that'll help the football team. So I think there's a chance that this works out for Elliott in a positive way.
Yeah. I mean, I think it has to. I think that's the only way to go forward, because if you have Mike Giardi with the, I almost said Mike Vrabel, but Mike Giardi with the intel that core players are going to be moved on from, and Elliott's just kind of standing there like trying to grab Duggar and grab Ramondre and say, not this guy, these are my guys, these are guys that I signed, that's where you get a major split between the vision that Vrabel seems exacting in Foxborough and what Elliott was trying to do last year. So I think this is like really where you see who's running the show. If they move on from players that they extended last season, that tells you that it's a totally new game in town under Vrabel.
And maybe Elliott was like relieved that Mike was coming in. Maybe when Mike kept referring to all those times, like, I met with Elliott, I've been meeting with Elliott, maybe it's because Elliott was like, oh, thank God you're here, Mike. I couldn't do anything. These guys won't let me sign people that are actually going to help us. Like, they just wanted to keep their players in town. Please, please do something. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe at the end of the day, we're going to find out that Elliott Wolf had no choice but to bring back these guys that were already on the team that were becoming free agents, and giving $9 million to Ramondre Stevenson, which I lost my mind about on the air at the time. Maybe Elliott Wolf didn't really have any power in that. 617-779-7937. Let us know what you think. We're also going to get into, we mentioned, Mego, a lot of the coaches that are on this team, the way Vrabel has built out the staff. One coach in particular is doing something that you may not have expected him to do. We will get into that coming up next year. It's Chime and Mego on Boston Sports Original WEEI, but right now, Zach's going to get you caught up with what's trending.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
5 seconds left. A chance to win this in regulation. Tatum going to work. Elbow jumper. Yes, sir!
That's how it sounded last night as Jason Tatum drilled a fadeaway jumper with 0.2 seconds left to lift the Celtics past the New Orleans Pelicans. 118-116, the final in New Orleans. Jaylen Brown led the way for the Seas with 28 points, while Tatum had 27 of his own. Next up, a trip to Philadelphia to take on the 76ers. That one goes down tomorrow night. Tip-off from the Wells Fargo Center set for 6. Bruins looking to bounce back after Thursday night's drubbing at the hands of the Winnipeg Jets. They'll host the New York Rangers this afternoon at the Garden. Puck drop set for 3:30. Speaking of those New York Rangers, yesterday they made a big move acquiring forward JT Miller from the Vancouver Canucks. They sent forward Filip Hedl a protected first-round pick and a prospect. Miller is expected to make his Rangers debut this afternoon at the Garden. Busy day of college hoops as conference play is in full swing. Some notable games today include number 5, Florida in Knoxville, taking on number 8, Tennessee. Number 20, Missouri in Starkville, taking on number 14, Mississippi State. 25, UConn heading to Milwaukee for a matchup with number 9, Marquette. And UNC goes to Duke to take on the second-ranked Blue Devils. Don't forget, you can hear Westwood One's coverage of that one right here on WEEI. Coverage starting at 6:15. My name is Zach Cohen. That's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More Shime and Mego coming up after this.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mego and Shime on WEEI.
So this is really one of the big discussions. How do the quarterbacks go? And I would say some of the Tennessee Titans brass, which Mark Bergonzi, the new general manager, Chad Brinker, their entire staff were in Mobile. You know, I think they kind of raised some eyebrows a little bit, saying they will not pass on a generational talent at one, leading one to believe that maybe if there is a player they deem worthy, maybe they do not take a quarterback at one. Certainly at least something worth considering. You know the Browns are probably going to take one. You know the Giants are probably going to take one. You have Cam Ward. You have Shador Sanders. So much intrigue as far as how it actually shapes out.
Shime and Mego here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. That was Ian Rappaport talking about the upcoming NFL draft and where quarterbacks may go in the top one, top two picks in Cam Ward and Shador Sanders. I know Dan Orlovsky this week tweeted out that he believes Jackson Dart is a first-round quarterback as well, might even be QB1 in the draft. Don't know if I'd go that far, but that's where Orlovsky stands at the moment. Mego, the Patriots find themselves with the fourth overall pick because they screwed up the final week of the season. Good job by them, I guess. And so they're hoping that a player like Abdul Carter falls right in their lap. Do you expect what Rap Sheet says to be true, and that these teams at the top of the draft are going to be interested in these quarterbacks, or do you think the Patriots will lose out on a talent like Abdul Carter?
So I'm still frustrated that they're sitting in the number four spot.
Yeah, kind of dumb.
Obviously, but I will say on the upside, it looks like in looking at this draft, the Patriots are so lucky that they got their quarterback in last year's draft. Because yeah. I remember at the time, like not to pick on anybody, but I was doing a show with Christian Arcan, and he was saying, I don't like a lot of the quarterbacks in this draft, talking about last year.
Well,
at least last year, they were all good.
All five that played in a game were all good. And then
like
J.J. McCarthy's still a question.
Caleb Williams didn't live up to the level. Is Arcan calling in right now?
I don't know.
Caleb Williams didn't live up to the level that we expected him to, but he's still, like, that's typical for number one overall in his rookie season. But I look at this draft, and I just have to follow the way that most of these drafts unravel, which is quarterbacks rise and rise and rise, and the closer that you get to it, the higher the quarterbacks are, the earlier that they go. Does that make a difference for when you're sitting in the number four spot and you're trying to actually pick at that spot? I think overall, the biggest miss is that you don't sit with a one or two seed where you can trade back and collect more draft capital. And that just sucks.
Yeah.
Or you can use what you have to trade for an actual player that you need on your roster. That just puts you in a bad position. Right now, the best you can think of is like, okay, do you see enough depth at offensive line or some other tremendous area of need where it makes sense to trade back and try to collect more of those players? But I think there's a danger there too, because you look at the way that draft experts talk about offensive linemen in this draft, and overall the talent just seems to be very shallow. The talent seems to be running out quick. You have a lot of guys where you go, is that a tackle? Is that a guard? Nobody really knows. They're very young. It's a different kind of system bringing offensive linemen out of college and into training camp and everything than it was years ago. So it's all roundabout way of saying, I don't really expect this number four pick to be like the mover and shaker for this entire, what Vrabel is trying to do here.
Yeah. I'm conflicted because I think there could be, I think there are blue chip players in this draft. Like, I think there are legitimate studs in this draft, but there's very few. And I don't think the quarterbacks
are any of
them.
It's not last year's draft.
No, last year's draft was historically good. You can go through the entire first round last year, and I want to say out of 32 picks that were made, 25, 26 of them were all really either like serviceable NFL talent to like all pro level talent. Like, that's how good last year's draft class was. It was insane. And that is not what this year's class is.
And you ended up with Jalen Polk and Javon Baker. So,
yeah.
You got that going.
All right. Rub it in a little bit more. It's not great.
It's fine.
Not a great spot.
It's okay. Ladd McConkey sucked. Don't worry.
Anyways, I feel like there's an opportunity here for the Patriots to get a good player, but we want to trade down. I just don't know that you're going to get the assets you would
That's
want for
I'm
trading
saying.
Down. And so you may be better off just picking BPA, best player available, at four. And unfortunately, I don't know that it's going to be Abdul Carter. Like, I know this week Schefter and Rappaport came out and were talking about how Tennessee and Cleveland could be taking quarterbacks and blah, blah, blah. I don't really buy it. I think it's a smoke grenade. I think it is their way of being like, hey, we don't want to be here either. Please come trade for this pick. Like, somebody that really wants a quarterback, be convinced that we really want the quarterback and offer us a ton of picks and stuff to come take our pick and take the quarterback, which I don't think is going to happen. I really don't expect many big trades in the top seven. And so I actually think that Tennessee and Cleveland are going to take Abdul Carter, Travis Hunter, one and two off the board.
Really?
Yes, in one form or another. I think Travis Hunter and Abdul Carter will be the first two players off the board. I think Cam Ward goes three to the Giants. And then the Patriots are left at four, probably with Will Campbell, the offensive lineman at LSU.
I just look at last year when you had Caleb Williams, you had Drake May for a lot of the season, the college season, in that number two spot on most people's draft boards. And you have Jaden Daniels, and people were still saying, could Marvin Harrison Jr. move up to at least the number two spot? And so I kind of feel like we get into this cycle of conversation every draft season, and maybe it's different this year because the quarterbacks are considered so far from the blue chippers that we had last year in the draft going in. But at the same time, I just tend to think, I know that there have been drafts where this doesn't happen, but when you have quarterback needy teams like the Browns, like the Giants, that those teams are going to just try for one of these quarterbacks because they don't have a ton of other options unless they decide that they're going to go, I don't know, try to get a super old Joe Flacco or something, and Cleveland already went down that route.
Yeah, and I think you see that with a team like the Giants. I think the Giants will take a swing at quarterback because they have Brian Daboll. He knows his number is almost up. Him and Joe Shane need to make a move, otherwise they're out. Like, they're done. This is it. And so they need to draft a young rookie quarterback and have him be successful. So, like, at three, I definitely think a quarterback would get drafted, but I look at a team like Tennessee and Brian Callahan, and I think he just wants competence. He dealt with Will Levis last year, surrender cobering on the field, like throwing picks to the ridiculous interceptions to the other team and just giving them points. And I think he would just rather veteran competence and take best player available for a team that doesn't have a ton of talent. And then Cleveland has the whole Deshaun Watson thing. Like, that's... Yeah. I think they're forcing Stefanski to kind of run it back with Deshaun Watson, even though he's injured again. They're probably, again, going to grab another veteran quarterback, and then when Deshaun's healthy, try and trot him out on the field because they're paying him all that money. And so they know, especially the Cleveland Browns, know that, like, they're not going to be good next year anyways. So they're better off drafting best player available, being bad again next year, and then maybe swinging at a quarterback when the quarterback class might be a little bit better.
So let's say that we believe Tennessee's what looks like a bluff.
Yep.
And we believe that Cleveland is not going for a quarterback.
Yep.
And as you say, Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter are both out in 1 and 2. So then what does that leave you with at 4? Are you looking for somebody who wants a quarterback and you're trying to trade back and collect something more out of that? Or are you just taking a player that's not one of those seem to be bona fide blue chippers? Maybe you're swinging on an offensive lineman hoping that he's going to be a starting left tackle when the season begins, or at least be behind somebody like who you're going to get in free agency or a trade.
So there's 3 options in my mind. One is pick at 4 and take Will Campbell, the offensive tackle at LSU.
Mm-hmm.
Pick at 4 and take Tet McMillan, the wide receiver at Arizona, which I think is probably the least likely of the options. And then option 3 to me is trade down with a team like New Orleans to 9. Because at this moment, like if you're at 4 and the board has gone Abdul Carter, Travis Hunter, Cam Ward.
Yeah.
I think the only teams interested in Shedeur Sanders behind you that would be able to trade up would be the Vegas Raiders at 6 and the New Orleans Saints at 9. I don't think Vegas moves up because they know the Patriots and Jacksonville don't need to pick quarterbacks at 4 and 5, and so they can just sit pretty at 6 and take Shedeur, which is, I think, exactly what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So the only wild card there is then that New Orleans, who desperately needs a quarterback because Lord knows Derek Carr is not the answer and they're probably going to move on from him anyways, and they're strapped so far up against the cap that they need to pay somebody pennies, they would want to draft a quarterback. I just don't know that they have the assets and would be prepared to move from 9 to 4, because that's a pretty big jump, and that would require a lot. And that would be ideal for the Patriots, because you're getting probably, you're getting 9 and a future first round pick to move that far back,
and you
which
don't
is
think,
great.
Yeah, you don't think that the Saints are going to be really good this year. So
not.
Then that first round pick becomes very valuable next
That's
year.
That's a top 15 pick.
Whether
next
you want to trade it for somebody to add to your team now, or whether you actually want to use that next year, that could be a big help.
Yeah.
I mean, that might be, to me, the more attractive move than sitting and taking an offensive tackle who, or offensive lineman who may or may not play tackle at 4, because as much as I want you to improve your offensive line, I can't add another guard. I can't add another guard. You've been in guard land. Like, you're like the Boston Celtics with how many guards, the guard depth that you have. I need you to go out and get a tackle. Maybe you get to do it in free agency or via a trade. But I don't know. If one of these guys is going to turn out to not be able to put on the size, or he's going to be more of a guard in the league, like, I can't have you using the 4 pick on that.
Yeah, I think all these people, I like, as you know, big nerd guy, big draft guy.
Mm-hmm.
I love height, weight, speed. I'm into all the measurables. I love all that stuff. I look at Will Campbell. I see a tackle. I don't see a guard. I don't understand why everybody is so quick to assume that Will Campbell will play guard in the NFL. He's 6'6", 323 pounds. Like, he's not a smaller guy. His arm length isn't untenable when it comes to playing tackle. Like,
is he the prospect who's supposed to be really good against the run?
I mean,
blocking for the run.
Yeah. So, like, he is a good run blocker, but, like, I don't know. I think he's just a good lineman, period.
Okay.
I think he's good in the pass. I think he's good in the run. Like, he plays with strength. He's not a mauler at tackle, like what you want in the run, like in an aggressive run game, but he's really good in pass pro. Like, I think he anchors well. I think he has good hands. Like, I like him a lot. I think he's a good offensive lineman. And so, if he's 1 on your board, like, you take him at 4 if you really like him. But I think the best case scenario is that a team like New Orleans would sell the bank to come up from 9. Like, that's the best case scenario.
Yeah, you've kind of talked me into it.
I just don't know if it's super reasonable, right? Like, because again, Shedeur Sanders is a kid where Deion's not afraid to pull like an Eli Manning, where it's like, if you draft my son, he's probably not going to play for you. And I don't know exactly how we would feel about New Orleans. I know they like Vegas. I know, I mean, because, you know, if Pete Carroll does crappy over the next 2 seasons and Shedeur's playing pretty good, Deion will just go be the head coach, because that's just the way Deion does things. He's been helping his son since his son was in high school. He took the job at Jackson State and then took the job at Colorado, and along came Shedeur. So, like, I wouldn't be shocked if Deion was the Vegas Raiders head coach in 2 years with his son starting at quarterback. That just, to me, makes sense. Whereas in New Orleans, I just don't see that as much.
How does Brady factor into that?
Why wouldn't Brady want Deion Sanders? It's kind of, like, that is just like a money-making machine to me.
True, that from that perspective, yes.
Yeah, and as an owner, I think, you know, a lot of the time is actually what you look for. Let's go to Dan in Rhode Island, wants to weigh in on the patch draft. What's up, Dan?
Same what you piggybacking on what you just said. I think the key to the whole offseason is going to be Sanders, because if he does really well at the combine and his stock goes way up, now you're in the top four, and Vegas is the team, not the Saints, that would probably jump from, what, six?
Four. Six to four. Yeah. Yes, you're right.
And they'd probably get, you could get their number one next year, more than likely. So, yeah, if Sanders is a guy, and even if Vegas doesn't jump up and someone else takes them and they jump past them, at least one of the other two probably is going to fall to them, the blue chip plays. You know what I mean? So I just think that Sanders is the key to the whole thing, because he's probably one of the few that would stay in the top four if he shows well, because the other three, Ward and the other two guys, are probably already solidified in there. That's just the way I hope it happens.
All right, thanks for the call, Dan. Yeah, I
Do you think Shador Sanders is going to do a lot at the combine?
No, because he's not going to test well.
That's
not
I'm
the
saying.
Kind of player he is.
He's not going to make or break himself there.
Cam Ward can make himself better at the combine and make himself more desirable. I don't think Shador can. It's not the kind of player he is. He's very much a like true pocket passer. As much as you think of Deion and the electricity and the athleticism, like, Shador is not the same. They are not the same. He is very much a statuesque pocket passer. He's got really good touch. He can throw the ball really, really well. I
think
like
he's
going to
jump off the page more or off the screen at the pro days.
Yeah. The pro days are going to be way more beneficial.
I would be surprised if he does much at the combine.
Yeah, he's probably going to run a slow 40. Like, he's not going to blow people away at the combine. So I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't even do much.
But what do his hands measure?
Yeah.
Remember that with Bryce Young?
Oh, that. So to be fair, that matters. Like, hand size.
Hand size matters?
Jalen Milroe at the Senior Bowl, his hand size is like 8.5 inches, which I think is like my hand size.
Careful here.
That's not good. That's to be an NFL quarterback, that's not ideal. And just for reference, Ozzie Trapillo, the offensive lineman out of BC who's at the Senior Bowl, his hands are like 10 and a half inches. They're friggin' cinder blocks, whereas Jalen Milroe has like dainty Greg Hill hands.
Dainty Greg Hill hands?
Yeah, that's
your
not
boss
good.
Is catching a stray at our program. I'm no part of this.
He has small
I'm no
hands.
Part of
He's
this.
Aware of it. He knows. But like at the quarterback position, that matters, because then, fumbling risks. And
yeah.
Kenny Pickett wears two gloves because he has tiny hands. You know, that's the whole thing. That's how it
I've
goes.
Never heard that.
You didn't hear that?
No, I haven't.
It was a huge topic at draft time. Is Kenny Pickett had like historically small hands for a quarterback, and that's a lot of times where.
Do you remember the measurement?
I want to say it was like 8.25.
Okay.
It was like the same size as my hands. And
wait, hold up your hands again.
They're not big.
They are kind of like carny hands.
Oh, thanks.
You know the Austin hands. Powers bit?
Yes.
Small hands.
He has very small hands.
Pickett was 8.5 inches.
8.5 inches. There you go. Yeah, so I think he's like slightly bigger than me.
To quote Courtney, which is crazy.
Now Courtney's catching strings.
No.
So with Jalen Milroe, that'll be a concern, and that's why Kenny Pickett wears gloves, so that he can hold on to the ball better. And so I think that matters when it comes to quarterback. I think Shador will measure fine in those regards. Like, he's not the tallest guy, but he'll probably come in at like 6'5", 6'1", maybe, which isn't small, but he's going to be like Baker Mayfield size-ish, but he just doesn't rip the ball or play the game with quite the same.
He's a little Polly Pocket. He like sticks in one place.
Yes.
He's a little guy.
We like to call them a park and bark. Like he's like Adele at
What's
a concert.
A park and bark?
Like, so when Adele is at a concert, she just kind of stands and sings or sits
and
sings.
Oh, I thought this was like when you take your dog out and tie him up.
No,
and
they are
at the dog park and they just bark at everybody.
No, it's you stand in one spot and you're just singing. Like, you're an opera singer, basically.
Okay.
You park and bark. Whereas, like, true performers get out there and they're working the stage and doing all those things. Shador Sanders is a park and bark. He's very much I don't know. Like, he's not. I'm trying to think of anybody comparable now.
So who is Drake May if he's a performer?
Oh, he's much more of a, I'm going to work the stage.
He's like a pop star or a rapper or something. Like, who's Drake May then? Is he like, or is he like Mick Jagger? where he's got so many moves.
He's got a lot of moves. Maybe he's like the Jonas Brothers. I know you were. We talked about the Jonas Brothers last time we were on together.
He needs his two other Jonas Brothers. Then.
That's true. He needs a couple
be
other Jonas
Brothers. Be careful at those
concerts. Joe Bros. Yeah, those can get you.
They can get the Joe Bros. Can get you.
That was what, the most hungover you've been like
that
ever.
That was the worst hangover I've had in the last 6 years. Being dragged to the Jonas Brothers concert by my friend who's a mother of two.
Amazing. Tremendous. 617-779-7937. How do you feel about the New England Patriots entering the draft? How do you feel about the coaching staff? What Mike Vrabel has done? One more segment here with Shime and Mego on Boston Sports Original WEEI.
Now, more of Mego and Shime on WEEI.
Sean here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Mego, I made a blunder. I may have screwed up.
You made a blunder? I thought you said you made a blender.
Nope, blunder.
Like, you fixed one? What?
Nope, you, not me. Blunder. I totally teased what we were going to do at 12:25, and then we never did it.
Oh, but that's because I distracted you with another thing from Giardi.
That's true.
We said Giardi was gonna dominate the whole hour, and we didn't follow through on that.
And let's be fair. When I see the NFL draft, I'm like a dog seeing a treat. I can only focus on that one thing. And so what we were going to talk about as well was the coaching staff of one Mike Vrabel has filled out quite nicely. And one guy who's actually being retained on the staff is doing a job that wasn't necessarily what you would expect. Ben McAdoo has been retained by the New England Patriots. And according to Giardi, this upcoming season, he is going to be serving or working on the defensive side of the ball. A man who has historically been an offensive coach. Mega, where do you currently stand on the idea that Ben McAdoo might be a defensive assistant or defensive consultant this year for Mike Vrabel's Patriots?
Ben McAdoo remains the most mysterious man with the New England Patriots.
Great mustache.
We only knew that he was involved in some way last year that may or may not have been with Drake May, and that he was this guy behind the scenes who was doing stuff.
Yeah.
And never got a lot more than that, despite us asking over and over again, what does Ben McAdoo do?
Like McAdoo do.
So from Giardi just this morning, he said the 47-year-old McAdoo will work on the defensive side of the ball in a role yet to be determined, which as far as I have been able to ascertain, he's never done in his collegiate or professional career, lists his over 15 jobs
that are all offensive
assistants or head coach. He says, your guess is as good as mine at this point. Sometimes you see NFL teams use former offensive coaches on the defensive side to help them identify weaknesses and how offenses might attack them. So that's interesting. My theory, what I was thinking about this morning when I saw this was, is this because they want McAdoo close to Vrabel? Is him working on the defensive side a way of being a closer assistant to Vrabel, or, you know, like in a way where it's like an organizational assistant?
Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily getting down to the brass tacks of defensive strategy, but being an organizational helping hand or another jar where Vrabel, and Bill used to do this a lot, where Vrabel would be able to take a piece of his brain out and put it in this jar and say, McAdoo's going to handle this side of this organizational thing. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yes, like, I understand what you're saying. I, however, think it's actually more schematic based. Like, I think it is exactly what Mike Vrabel just did a year ago with Cleveland. He was an offensive coach. He wasn't a defensive coach. He was an offensive coach with the Browns, and he's doing the opposite thing with Ben McAdoo.
But is that him setting McAdoo up for another head coaching job?
No, I don't think that's it. I think Vrabel recognized that he learned a lot from Kevin Stefanski and the offensive side of the ball. And so, and I think the offense learned a lot about defense because of Mike Vrabel. And so I think his thought process is, okay, I want an experienced offensive guy to assist my defense in understanding how offenses think. And that's what Ben McAdoo is doing. I don't think this is a way for Ben McAdoo to get another head coaching job or anything like that. I just think that Vrabel recognized the benefits of putting a coach normally on one side of the ball with the other side in order to help. And who better to do that than a former NFL head coach who has been an offensive lifer moving over to the defensive side of the ball and keeping him on the staff?
So I think that's a really interesting comparison. I would say from Stefanski's perspective with the Browns, I would guess that what they worked out with Vrabel in his assistant role there was very much to get Vrabel back in the position to be head coach.
Probably.
And part of that may have been Vrabel saying, I need to position myself as somebody who at least has a little more
flexibility.
Yeah, or know-how on offense.
Yep.
Obviously, he's never going to be an offensive play caller or super mind or anything, but he can at least say that
he can contribute in a meeting.
Stefanski over there. So I don't know like how much, unless McAdoo is trying to completely reinvent the wheel with himself as a 47-year-old, how much that would play into it. But here's the other thing I would pose. Do we feel weird about having somebody from offense go over to defense in this assistant way when we have criticized? It's a different level of coaching, but past iterations of the Patriots for taking a defensive guy and putting him on offense. So are we acting like offense is so superior that you should be okay with having an offensive guy go over to the defense because he can actually teach you a thing or two about what the offense is
going to
do?
So to be fair, like Ben McAdoo is not going to call plays like that.
I know,
Patricia
I'm saying
did.
It's definitely a different level of coaching.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think it's a bit of a different landscape. Like they have a legitimate defensive coordinator there. They have position coaches. Ben McAdoo is just, I think, an assistant, an advisor that they can kind of bounce ideas off of. Ben McAdoo can be like, look, this is how offenses are operating right now with these motions and these schemes and these looks. Like, this is how you can take advantage of it. Whereas when it was Matt Patricia, they were making a defensive coordinator the offensive play caller, which I think was a nightmare.
Yeah, I just think it's really hard to say without even completely understanding what Ben McAdoo's roles and responsibilities
sure.
were under the disaster that was last season.
Yeah.
And you don't see coaches being retained other than with the special teams unit. Mm. And so it looks to me like, is Ben McAdoo somebody who's actually very connected to the crafts or the front office?
Maybe.
And that's part of the reason he's staying on. And he has a nice relationship with Vrabel, so that's fine. But I think there's just so much mystery around what that guy's doing here.
Yeah, the one last thing I would say about it is that it also makes me feel better about Drake May because they're keeping nobody that was around Drake May this year around at all. No, nobody. And so that indicates to me that they believe Drake May grew all on his own and that he'll grow even more with actual competent coaches, which is great. This has been Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Thank you for listening. It is Rob Bradford coming up next. Zach, great job behind the board today. We will see you next Saturday. Shime and Mego will be back on. Mego, you'll be on with the Greg Hill Show on Wednesday.
I will.
And I will be on with the Greg Hill Show like I normally am all week long, Monday morning starting at 6 a.m. We'll talk to you later. See ya.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
So, I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Almacid, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Almacid has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Almacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almacid.com. That's almased.com.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.